shall be spring in Pall Mall, while Buster for Jones wears white spats.
About a minute?
We better wait.
We better wait even for the dart throw. Okay, so coming up in the show, we'll throw the dart and we'll call Crete, so it's a reason to live for the next hour of the show. Don't go away for that. Plenty more coming up besides this, right, Jim?
Right. What Do You Know is produced by Michael Feldman, associate producer Jim Packard, assistant producer Catherine Carmody, with assistance from Lyle Anderson. Funding for What Do You Know comes from National Public Radio member stations and the NPR Arts and Performance Fund. Contributors include the Herman Goldman Foundation and the Idelson Foundation. The show is delayed in some cities. If so, you can still play the quiz by sending us a picture postcard with your name, address, and phone number to What Do You Know, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
Just looking for the Bickles here. The Bickles don't live there anymore. Well, there's no Bickles in Crete. I wonder where the Bickles went.
I don't know.
They left the garden, apparently, at some point. Well, listen, stay tuned. In most areas, we'll come back. If not, this could be the end of the show where you listen. Otherwise, thank you for listening, and thank you for being here.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.
And you're listening to KUAC-FM, broadcasting from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. In just a few moments, it's Homefires Radio Show with host Patty Kastelic. And then later today, it's Madama Butterfly by Puccini on the Lyric Opera of Chicago. I hope you stay tuned. And once again, you're listening to KUAC-FM in Fairbanks, public radio for Alaska's interior. And now, Homefires Radio Show.
Good morning and welcome to Home Fires Radio Show. I'm your host, Patty Kastelic. And welcome to my guests. I have with me in the studio Janet Halverson, John Steinbach, a friend from Juneau, Dick Holden, an ex-Fairbanksan, and Ralph Nestor. Welcome. We're going to talk about tourism in Alaska, and all of the people in the room with me today, or in the studio with me today, are expert on this topic. I guess we'll start with you, Ralph. When did you come to Alaska?
Spring of 1974.
And from the very beginning, you've been involved with tourism here?
Yeah, I came and I've been with the university since 1974. I began and developed the Tourism Industry Management Program within the School of Management.
Prior to your arrival, there was not... that curriculum was not in place.
No, there were no curriculums in the state at all, and for an industry as large as it was, the industry and the Alaska Visitors Association worked with the university to get a program pushed through the legislature that would allow for someone to be hired to begin a program.
Your background was in the field of tourism, academically,
yeah,
or
both. I started out, I guess, when I was 10 or 12 years of age, working in the restaurant business. Then I went on to Cornell University, and at the first, I was not in the hotel school, but I started tending bar and cooking in a restaurant. Then I started running a bar and left school and decided when I was in Nassau in the Bahamas that I wanted to go into the hotel business. I went to work for Sky Chefs and Howard Johnson's at different times, and then went back to the university, to Cornell, and got both my bachelor's degree and my master's degree in hotel administration, and then went and started some academic programs for the University of Minnesota, and then 1974 came here.
Is it a popular major?
Oh, yeah, very much so, particularly today, as young people look for jobs that offer them a wide range of career possibilities. They can work out in the rural areas if they want. They can work in the resort business. They can get into the action if they want in the big cities of Anchorage or Fairbanks. We've got quite a few students that have gone into transportation, some that work for the larger companies like Princess and West Tours on American Lines. We've got them that work for our local convention and visitors bureau. We've got them in other state associations. So there's a wide range of possibilities, and it's a nice kind of field and one that it's fun working with people.
Mm-hmm. Go to Janet, and then we'll open up. Janet, your position
I'm the director of the Convention and Visitor Bureau here in Fairbanks.
How long has that been in existence?
The Bureau has been in existence for approximately 4 years. It had started as a part or a branch of the Chamber of Commerce, and then in 1982 or 1983, there was a split, and it became its own organization and developed the Bureau and Visitor Information Center and so forth.
What kind of things do you do?
We take care of bringing tourists into Fairbanks and encouraging group meetings and conventions to come here, as well as making sure that the visitors enjoy themselves while they're here.
You run the walking tours?
Yes, we run walking tours. We have publications that we put out. There are brochures on Fairbanks and self-guided driving tours, self-guided walking tours, as well as the walking tours. We have various slideshows that we can show to newcomers to the area, visitors and tourists. And we try and keep current on all the attractions that are in the area so that we can give information to tourists, as well as the hotel accommodations and restaurants, various other events that are going on in the community.
You have a phone number that people can call? And
yes, uh-huh. We have one phone number, 456-INFO, which gives a listing on a daily basis of all the activities that are happening in the Fairbanks area so that no one can say that there isn't something to do, because every day there's lots to do in Fairbanks. And then our office number is 456-5774.
It's the 456-INFO number that I've seen advertised and in fact have used.
Good.
John is manager. This little mouth problem from Robert here. John Steinbach is the manager of Travelers Inn and?
The Fairbanks Inn, which are both West Tourist Hotels in Fairbanks.
How long have you been with West?
I've been in Fairbanks since January, and prior to that I was with West Tourist for 5 years, managing the Klondike Hotel in Skagway, which is a seasonal operation, and which meant the winter times were spent in Seattle, working in the Seattle office down there. And prior to that, I'd spent 5 other years in Alaska. When I was in college, I escorted tours for Cook's Tours, who traveled on West Tours itineraries. And so the first time I came to Fairbanks was 1962.
Leading a tour.
And we used to stay at the Nordale Hotel in those days. And in 1964, I was at the grand opening of the Fairbanks Inn, and at the end of the season, all the escorts got together, and we decided it was too far out of town. We went back to the Nordale.
Too far out of town.
We still have sort of the same problem. Except I had to overcome it now.
Richard, did you get into tourism from a career in show business, or?
No, I'm not an expert at it either. I haven't lost enough money at it yet. No, Judy and I have been interested in the tourism business ever since I quit the state government at the end of 1979, particularly in Southeast. Southeast Alaska, of course, is in a somewhat different situation from the interior. First of all, climatically, it's not so difficult in the wintertime. But it also is becoming a major destination for cruise ship travel. So there's a lot of visible tourist activity in Juneau and Southeast, unlike some of the interior cities. We got into the business by buying a business. We found out pretty quickly that if you want to know anything about tourism, you better be doing some, because the people in the tourism business just don't talk to you if you don't. But once you're in that, it's like a family you join, and everybody knows everybody else, and even though you're dead competitors, people help each other out and all that sort of thing. So we bought a little movie theater of the same kind that's being run in Anchorage, that great adventure thing of Alaska, and ran that for a couple of years just to see how the business works. And while we're doing that, I thought we'd have a lot of fun if we could build a hotel. So we're going to build a hotel on the Merchants Wharf site there, starting at the end of June this year. So I'm no expert at all, and I'm sure I'll be sadder and wiser by the time I indulge my fantasy. But it's a great business to be in. It's very nice to be contemplating the notion of looking after people who want you to like them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the upper side of human nature you're dealing with all the time when you're dealing with tourists, and it's a pretty happy sort of place to be.
People in general want to be happy and enjoy their vacation, so they're certainly going to try and be in a good mood. We are live and in the studio today, so I would welcome your questions or anything that you would like to add to this discussion on tourism in Fairbanks and Alaska. Our phone number is 474-5044. 474-5044. So feel free to call and join us with your questions or comments. Tourism has been increasing, not only in Fairbanks, but in Alaska. Why is that, do you think?
Well, I would suppose this year it's steadily been increasing, but this year particularly, the situation in the Middle East and in the Mediterranean has sent more cruise ships to Alaska, as well as the dollar softening a bit has kept people from necessarily touring Europe, so they're coming to Alaska. But I know there are other reasons, and please jump right in, gentlemen.
Well, I think one of them, being a member of the AVA Marketing Council.
Alaska Visitors Association.
Right, which is a an industry group that works with the Division of Tourism to help advise the state on spending of the tourism advertising dollars, and this program has been extremely successful. It was started back during the Hammett administration, has been continued this year, not this year, but for the past few years under the Sheffield administration. And we have been, I think, extremely lucky, and with the support we've gotten from the legislature and the support that we've gotten from not only the tourism community, but the business community at large. And the marketing is a very sophisticated program. I think it's just a number of requests we get from other states about our program shows how popular how well it has worked. And we have continued even back during the late 70s and early 80s when the rest of the destinations in the U.S. were in at least a flat season. We were still growing, and I think in great part it's by that, and from the dedication of the industry people and the industry leaders who have spent the time to work with the DOT and the DOT and the legislatures. It's just been a great big partnership, and the administration has helped, of course. Some people would say, well, tourism is up this year and it's great, therefore we need to spend less money. However, we are in real competition with every other state now for the visitors' dollars, and with the Canadian North, and of course Expo is another thing that's helping us this year. But then there's next year, and almost every state in the union has raised their tourism advertising dollars by about an average of 14%. And this year we were fortunate that we will have a budget that will be a continuance budget in light of some of the other budgets in the state. And so
how much is that budget?
It's $7.1 million, and that includes the administration of the Division of Tourism as well as the advertising and marketing part of the program.
What does our marketing campaign consist of?
Well, it consists, I think, and one of the things that I really like for everybody in the state is our travel planner, which now is called the official Alaska State Travel Planner, and about 500,000 to 600,000 copies of this are printed every year. And it's a book, some 32 pages of where to go, what to do, and how to do it, and then another bunch of pages on experiences in Alaska, off-season in Alaska. But every business that's associated with tourism, large or small, in the state gets a free listing with an address and approximately 50 words to tell about their business. And I can't think of any place that you could get that kind of advertising for free. It then it's also put into our media program, which is involved in television in 10 of our strongest markets on the West Coast and the Minneapolis area, Chicago area, the Milwaukee area, and the Miami area, which that and Arizona, of course, have a lot of retired Alaskans that are still there. That's tied to the television with a response. We also have a very strong magazine program, both in upscale magazines like Modern Maturity and National Geographic, but also the highway-oriented, which are particularly interesting to the interior businesses. The the Discovery magazine, which is one of the State Farm, and the AAA magazines, and the camping shows and things like that. And additionally, in the last year, we've gone into a real heavy public relations program. One of the biggest things about Alaska is that, and Dick kind of alluded to this, and it's not only a problem for us in the interior, but is the weather. People on the outside believe we're a land of ice and snow, and of course they get to Fairbanks in the summer and it's 90 degrees and they don't know what's going on.
Or drizzling.
Right. But that's one of the biggest problems that we have. So these public relation kinds of things, they encompass a lot of things. The things that you'll see, the typical editorial where this thing, guys, as well, the Midnight Sun baseball game, which will be coming up in Sunset Magazine in July. But then even such things, and I can't remember his name, the fellow that does the early morning weather on the early morning news has started to talk about Alaska. And if you just notice that all last winter, Anchorage and Fairbanks and Nome were traditionally warmer than Chicago and Cleveland and Minneapolis. And this starts to plant that attitude in people's minds that maybe Alaska is not just a land of ice and snow. And it used to be, during the pipeline, we had the problem with prices being high and the accommodations being filled and things. And so we have to dispel those as well, that there are rooms available in the summer and that there are, the prices are reasonable. And I got into an argument on that one time with a fellow from the San Francisco Wall Street Journal. You know, if you've ever been to San Francisco, prices in Fairbanks and Anchorage look pretty cheap. And so that's the kinds of things that the marketing program has done. It's been very successful, and it's looked at by all the states.
It's amazing how some inaccurate feelings do persist. I ran into someone in the Safeway parking lot one time, and they had very mixed feelings. They were really surprised to see that we had supermarkets, and I think although they were pleased to be able to buy things, I think in some ways they were sort of disappointed. Yeah. They just kept saying, I can't believe you've got stores just like ours. It's got everything in it that we had.
Well, I think that, and John will probably back me up on this, the people, many of the people who come to Alaska, particularly on package tours, want the our older folks, and they're more passive. They tend to talk about the adventure that they want. They want to be out in the wilderness, and they want to see wildlife. But every evening they want to go back to the Travelers at Fairbanks Inn or other hotels, have a fully carpeted cocktail lounge, relax, and have a nice warm bed to sleep in, and well-prepared food.
Cable television.
That's right.
Little entertainment. Right.
And, and they really get scared when they get to some, well, Beaver Creek always comes to my mind. If there's not a television in the room, well, nobody bothers with television. And now they're starting to get. But telephones. Now, who are they going to call? They're on vacation for 3 or 4 weeks. No one knows exactly where they are. They don't know. But, yeah, these things.
But they're used to having telephones in hotels.
It's a security.
Yeah. Security.
Yeah. I think in that's a big point. And, you know, Ralph alluded to the age of our tours. And mind you, our tours are only a small segment of the whole market, the package tours. But the average age is about 63. But that means there's quite a few of them that are 79 and 82. And they feel safer if there's a telephone where they can call the front desk if they have a medical problem or they...
One of the things that has always struck me as amazing, there are a number of people who view a drive down or up the highway as a really major adventure, and yet every year we see people who are really very elderly going in these huge motor homes and just coming up the highway as if there isn't a problem, and a flat tire on one of those is... not a minor event. I mean, I have to hand it to them. They have a terrific sense of adventure.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. It's always amazed me. My father's friends came up in 1942, the first year, 1943, the first year the highway was open, and you had to have 14 extra tires and 3 belts, and they checked you just like they used to going over the Chilkoot Trail. And now I see these signs on some of these vehicles, Alaska bust. Well, I want to put one on in California that says New Jersey or bust.
Yeah,
because I don't think it's any different.
Same.
The road is paved. The road is in excellent shape. I've got a friend that just drove up. My wife, when we were courting, was driving the road, it seemed, every month between Milwaukee and Fairbanks. And in a little old...
Why was she doing that, Rose?
She couldn't make up her mind. But
she'd get out trip.
To someplace in Dawson Creek and say, yeah, I'm coming back. Well, no, I'm not. Whatever.
Couldn't she get a boyfriend and somewhere?
I don't know. But as you said, Patty, we see all these older folks that drive and have absolutely no problem. And there are... There's gas and there's food and there are telephones and there are auto repair places all along the highway and it's monitored and it's a lot safer.
But there are a lot of mythologies that people carry around even after they've been here and they go back because it's safer that way. During the earthquake in Anchorage, there was a woman standing in Penny's, a little old lady, and she was marveling to the young girl behind the counter how rugged Alaskans must be and what a remote place this is and that usual line of country. And the building started to shake. And then the lights went out and the ceiling fell down and all the displays came down and the walls fell off. And the building rattled around about 5 minutes and the girl picked herself up after it all finished and found a flashlight. And she ran around in front of the counter. All the Alaskana had come down on this little old lady. And she picked her up and dusted her off. And the lady said, honestly, I don't know how you people can take it.
A bear walked by and... Yeah. Sure. The walls shook. Yeah. Our phone number is 474-5044. I'm speaking with Ralph Nestor, Dick Holden, John Steinbach, and Janet Halverson about tourism in Alaska.
One of the things I wanted to mention, Ralph was talking about the State Department Division of Tourism's official vacation planner, and we receive a lot of inquiries at the Convention and Visitor Bureau from that publication. People write to the state, they receive the publication, and then they can write to the individual areas and receive additional information. And it is, I agree with Ralph, a very successful program. Since John and I started working the same day in our new jobs in January, since I've been in this position, we've received over 3,000 to 4,000 inquiries that have been related to one way or another to the official vacation planner. So yeah, it is a tool that's very useful for the state.
One thing that I want to mention about that travel planner, of course, is that it's we have what they call a co-op program here, which is a cooperative marketing effort between private industry and the state. And we had this year, I think it was 129 marketing partners, which are businesses within the state who donate the monies to the state to be pooled to go into this cooperative program. The state puts in some money and the private industry people. And when you become a marketing partner, then you receive labels and names from the people who request this kind of information, as well as people who just write to you because you're an advertiser. And that's been a very extraordinarily well-done program. And of the 7 million, then that's supplemented by about 1.2 million by the marketing partners. And then all the companies go out on their own and spend in the neighborhood of $25 to $26 million additionally to advertise Alaska. So what they put into the marketing program is generic. That's just to advertise Alaska.
I was going to say, last year, the other partner spent $30 million. In addition to the $7 million that the state spent. So there's $37 million spent on advertising the product up here.
And you can't undervalue the value of that expenditure either. You know, we sit here or wherever we sit in Alaska and see a lot of activity going on and think, well, they're doing something. But that, in a lot of ways, is a drop in the bucket to reach the markets that we haven't even scraped yet. You know, particularly the Oriental market. There are a lot of people in Japan and China and Taiwan and Hong Kong who don't know anything about Alaska at all and would come here if they did.
Wasn't there a recent tour?
Yes, Ralph met them in Juneau, I believe. Were you at the governor's mansion for dinner with the group?
No, I had breakfast with them.
The marketing council, and then we entertained them here in Fairbanks, a group of 7 Japanese tourist industry-oriented people, president of Nippon Airlines, some hoteliers.
Operators of the largest travel agency in the world, the largest this, the largest.
I say they're leaders
of leaders of Japanese tourism.
Japanese tourists are famous. I mean, they go everywhere.
That's right.
Well, they're great nation of travelers.
Yeah, and particularly since the government has taken off the travel restrictions on them and the restrictions on how much they can spend and where they can go, basically. And they have such a highly organized travel industry that and they use the mass media of television so much to market. And by our standards, it's just amazing when they can move one company 10 million people in a year.
Oh, yeah. Last year, during their visit, they said that 18 million Japanese leave their shores each year and or go abroad, and 6 million go to the United States. And last year, I think 6,000 visited Alaska. So you see, there's a wide market out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We just negotiated an arrangement with a big Oriental tour agency, and to us it was a miracle, but to them it was a stroke of the pen. They're going to give us 20,000 people for 3 nights each, starting next year, and they've told us that exactly the months that they want us to accommodate their people, how many people, and what kind of thing they want us to do, because they're all organized. You know, they're mostly company employees that they book in bulk, and that's the problem we arrived at after that was that the agency said the only problem they had with that beautiful project was a little small. And so we thought, my goodness gracious, what do we do? So we made it bigger.
Okay. Well, that's
but they
great.
Have giant volumes.
Yeah. Giant, really. And when they were in the interior, the businessmen that were here last week, they were looking at things that they could promote back in Japan for mm-hmm. people to come here. It amused me because in many conversations, everyone was promoting our cross-country skiing in the interior. And we soon found out that cross-country skiing in crowded Japan is almost non-existent. They have their downhill skiing. They like that. They don't have room for trails and so forth. So we learned a little lesson there and what we need to do, too.
But it was really came home. We were sitting there having breakfast, and these are very knowledgeable, traveled people.
Oh, certainly.
And finally, Mr. Okuda looked at me, and he said, well, Ralph, he said, just... what is there in Fairbanks? But, I mean, just the way he said it, you know, what could you ever do? Why would I ever want to go there? And that takes you back that here are some people that are here to learn, and I'm glad they were, and they'll go back a lot more knowledgeable, but we have to get that message out. Pardon?
What did you tell him?
Well, I told him, of course, there's the university, there's the museum, there are the rivers, there are wildlife, there are hotels, there are restaurants, there's dog mushing in the winter. And this is one of the things that the Japanese market is important for, and other foreign markets, is in the development of our winter markets. Mm-hmm. We've got problems in certain areas of Alaska where we've got a lot of hotel rooms. It's like building the church for Easter Sunday. And we've got 3 months of heavy occupancy, and all of a sudden we get into the end of the fall and winter, and we're not doing as well. So if we can build that season up, I think it makes it profitable through the year, because it will allow hotels to keep people on all year, to have full employment, to maintain reasonable room rates, et cetera.
Is that more of a problem here in Fairbanks than it is, say, in Juneau, that...
Yeah, it is a
I
bit because
so.
Of the weather, because right. of the temperature. That's it's purely a function of temperature.
Plus, the legislature provides quite a bit of...
diversion?
Well...
entertainment?
That, plus hotel business during the...
Yeah.
So it's a real problem in Sitka. It's a problem in Ketchikan. To an extent, in Juneau, when the legislature was winding up, they weren't absolutely full when I was down there last week.
In Skagway, the hotel I managed down there had 220 rooms, and... we moved the Skagway on the 1st of May and open on around the 20th of May and stay open until the 20th of September, at which point we closed down and locked the doors. There was absolutely no business at all. That was really a case of building a church for Easter.
Yeah. But Fairbanks, I think, has a serious problem, and that's why people from the interior are so interested in the development of, with Janet's operation, with the incentive travel, with the convention and meetings market, because right. they come in the off-season. They come in right. the fall, and they come in the spring. And you know, we're pretty good shape during the summer, but we need the fall business, the spring business. We need the Ice Festival. We need the North American. We need the Yukon Quest. We need the luge. We need the bobsled. Any of these things that bring small numbers of people to Fairbanks that can grow and bring
I was
more.
Going to say I've done a couple of shows on the luge because it's such an impressive volunteer project. And JB was saying at a couple of points that they were hoping that would be an additional attractor for tourists, and because there are so few luge runs in the country.
Yes, and also I think they are working hard toward making it a training site, which would bring additional people here over the course of the winter for training for other world competitions and so forth. So we, I think, should pursue these things.
This summer, they're working on extending the run to 700 meters, and I believe they're going to be able to do that. And then there'll be two meets scheduled here next winter using the facility out there.
Has this effort to attract the Winter Olympics here helped, do you think, or will it help?
Well, it's helped tremendously to get the state and, of course, Anchorage a tremendous amount of possibility. And therefore, you know, what helps Anchorage will help us. And it will help Juneau, anything. It's all positive action. And, of course, if they are picked for the Olympics, for the Winter Olympics, then that means we... everybody, there'll be spin-off business, and it will be a tremendous push.
And I don't know if who's had a chance to see some of the promotional material they put together. They have a great video cassette, promoting Fairbanks, and the effort has taken this promotion all over the country and to Europe and the Far East. They just had a meeting in Korea, and they were there, and. Just the promotion of Alaska through this one effort is very valuable.
And very substantial.
Oh, yeah. I'm one of their ambassadors, you know, to the Australian Olympic people, to try and talk them into supporting the thing. So I have some involvement with those people. And there's a nice element to that effort of Anchorage's to get the Olympics, I think. You know, I've lived here 20 years, and I've been on the government breast for 12 of those running around the state building things. And the strongest impression you used to get socially and politically about this state was that every town hated every other town, and the only thing they'd agree upon is they hated carpetbaggers worse. Well, tourism is an industry where people, in order to make it, have to help each other. Nobody's going to come to Alaska to spend 3 nights in Juneau. It's too expensive. We've found in the travel planning we're starting to do for next year that the most common question we get from the people who are directing people at us is how many destinations can you develop in Alaska? Because if they come here and they can go southeast, Anchorage, Fairbanks, we will benefit and they will benefit, and they get a much better view of the state. And it's a kind of industry that pulls people together instead of keeping them apart, which is another fun thing about it.
That's a real good point. We've always been what they call a touring destination. We're not a destination as such, Alaska. People will not, and they tried back 4 or 5 years ago to develop a program to Juneau or a program to Anchorage or 6 days in Fairbanks, 6 days in Nome. People wouldn't buy it. It's not like 6 days in Las Vegas.
Second prize is 12 days in Nome.
Yeah, right.
Well, exactly. What they want to do is they want to travel, and they want to see Arctic Alaska. They want to see the interior. They want to see Southeast. Yeah. And that's why the cruise tour has been so successful among the package tour people, and yet now we see all kinds of adventure travel coming on. We see fly drive programs coming on. We see hostel programs. We see any number of new types of things being brought on, which is good. And the other thing that's kind of helped us was the ANILCA and the passage of the Alaskan Native Lands Claim Settlement Act, which dealt very little with, but all of a sudden you had an area like Gates of the Arctic that nobody was visiting virtually, and so they make it a park, and all they did was put a name on it. Now everybody wants to know about it, and so those kinds of things have had some positive reactions outside of Alaska.
Gates of the Arctic being up in the Brooks Range,
right?
Mm-hmm. Do you do a lot of promotion for people to fly out of... Actually, Fairbanks is a real good jumping-off place where you can fly out. Do you promote that kind, or do you try and keep everybody focused here?
Well, that's interesting. We've just been involved. John and I are on the board of the Convention Bureau that Janet works for, and that's one of the things that we've kind of been looking at, is something new to develop Fairbanks as a central location for the interior, for for the jumping off, Nome, Kotzebue, Barrow, birding trips to Wiseman and Coalfoot and these other areas, because that's one of the things that Fairbanks has always been, as a hub. And I think that's another. We want to keep them, but we realize, just like Dick said, that we're not going to fight with Juneau. If they come to Juneau, then we're going to try to pull them up here. Yeah, or right. If we get them here, we're going to say, hey, go to Southeast, because that's the kind of thing that's going to make their experience much happier.
The better overall their whole trip sure. is, mm-hmm. the more likely they are going to go yeah. and share that message with their friends.
Right.
Yeah, and people have a good sense that the unit cost of their travel to get there, you know, is a function of what they're going to enjoy or how much enjoyment they're going to get at the end of it. And it's expensive to get up here, mm-hmm. yet. We don't have the volume that induces the airlines to give us really good fares yet.
Exactly.
They'll come, but not yet. So the more you can use them or have them use their time when they're here, the more they're happy.
Now, I was surprised by that. My family looking to see if there were some kind of reasonable, cheap promotional things that they could get a cheap flight up, and there aren't that many. It's reasonable to go out than it is.
Well, I don't know about that. It seems expensive up here, but on the other hand, I think that the airlines have the same problems that the hotels have, and that's that in the summer, you know, we have 21, 23 flights to Seattle a day, whatever it is, and yet in the winter, until we build that kind of traffic, it's not profitable. And so we find those airlines that stay have a difficult time in making it in the winter. Those that don't that have extra planes in the summer can come in and then just walk. And so consequently, they take some of the cream and don't leave any milk for the winter. Mm-hmm. But I think that we'll see some changes. The air has cut down, Dick mentions the unit cost, the air has cut down at least the time of travel, so people no longer have to spend a week getting here and a week going back. And so, again, they see it as a better deal maybe to come here and either go on a motor coach or to come here and rent an RV or rent a car and travel or go on the ferry one
way. Oh, yeah. There are a lot of potential opportunities for integrated travel planning within the state that are just starting to open up now. I was a bit surprised, to tell you the truth, being a neophyte in the business you people have been in for years, to find out how little people really know about this place when you get outside and start dealing with them. And then you think, my goodness gracious, there are good people. And I think our Division of Tourism at the state level, it does a very good job. Don Dickey is a very well-experienced old-timer around here, and he runs a pretty good show. And they do, and between them and the industry, we spend quite a lot of money. But it's nothing. It's a drop in the bucket.
Well, you look at Canada spends $25 million advertising in the United States.
Yeah.
We, you know, on the national level, our travel budget is less than our state's budget this year, the USTTA, and it's probably going to be cut. Every president since John F. Kennedy has tried to wipe out our promotional board, and that's because the industry has never been coordinated as one. And I think that's something that Dick again mentioned in Alaska. We have coordination. I mean, the AVA has gift shops and hotels and big operators and little two-bit people selling Kool-Aid on the side of the streets. Well, that's probably stretching it, but it's large and small, and so we get this kind of cooperation, and the state sees that these people are doing it. But you're right. We've got an awful lot of work to do to make people, number one, know that Alaska is a desirable place to visit, that there are things to do, that our accommodations and our food are up to par with other locations, and to just expand the market.
It makes a lot of sense as we're always talking about what kind of industries can we develop in Alaska, and of course we have transportation problems and so on, but tourism seems to be an absolutely logical one because it's such an extraordinarily beautiful state, and I think there's a lot of curiosity, just natural curiosity about it, even though there may be some misinformation.
Well, I think the state AVA has really honed in on that point too, and that they've developed a new marketing strategy within the state anyway to inform all of us how important tourism is in the state, and they're calling it the second pipeline, the tourism pipeline.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is that tourism, we all like to say, and of course we're in the business, so we tend to be positive, but tourism is a clean business. It's not extractive. People take very little home with them. It's renewable. The person that came this year can come back next year. They can come again. If they take a picture of a moose this year, they can take that picture of the same moose next year. It also is the kind of business that people enjoy. It's a people business. It's a visiting business. We Alaskans certainly are big travelers, and so we tend to have people here. On the other hand, I get a kick sometimes. You ask a person on the street, well, what do you think of tourism in Alaska? And they say, oh, my God, you know, hordes of people with buttons on or all these numbers of people at my fishing hole or whatever. And they'll be somewhat less than positive, and yet that same person may be standing on the corner down on 2nd Avenue and someone come up and ask them how to find this or how to find that, and pretty soon they're taking them home to dinner.
Yeah.
So it's a real different kind of thing. But I think for the future, we've got problems with fishing, we've got problems with logging, we've got problems with oil and gas, and mining obviously is being attacked by the environmental lobbyists, and the state has to look at tourism, which is renewable and not that extractive.
And actually very good for all the communities, too, because even though there's extra traffic and perhaps some wear and tear on our infrastructure and so forth, we improve our roads, we improve things, which make it better for us as citizens of the state, too.
Yeah, you know, there's certain facilities built in every area that wouldn't exist without tourism. And when the tourists go home in the fall, these facilities are left for everyone to use.
The advantage of using them. I'm speaking, if you've joined us late, with John Steinbach, Dick Holden, Ralph Nestor, and Janet Halverson, and we are speaking about tourism. And we are in the studio live, and you may call us 474-5044 and say how you feel about tourists. I've seen some bumper stickers that say something fairly obnoxious, like, now you've been here, goodbye, or you...
Oh, no, I think that's the Oregon kick. They used to have a group of greeting cards. Dan P. McCall, the governor of the great state of Oregon, invites you to visit, and then you open it up, Afghanistan, California, Tunisia. They were very, very negative for a long time,
I think they're paying the price for it.
Oh, absolutely.
They are.
Yeah, and California the same way for a while, and they're paying. And yet we've got a different kind of tourism. We don't have a mass tourism where, Dick mentioned the price, it's fairly expensive, so we don't have millions and millions of people coming in and really getting to the friction level. And I think most of the people in the industry would like to see us spread the tourism to the widest areas of the state rather than just having millions of people in one town so that it gets to the point where we can't live in the summer or where they don't have as enjoyable an experience.
Right. That's right.
We have a caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted some information about some of the economics involved in tourism. I think we're all aware that a lot of the people who package all of these tours are based in Seattle, and certainly the airlines are that way too. They package Alaska, and seemingly that money stays outside of Alaska except for what they spend in gift shops. I'm also sort of concerned about how the cruise ship industry works when they're all self-contained, and it's like those people who used to come up in Winnebago's, bought all their food outside, spent minimal amounts here, and then left. I know there is an economic value to them. How would they compare to, let's say, the people who come independently? Can you comment about those things?
Let me just start, and then I think John Steinbach will have some things to say.
Okay,
thanks for the question.
One thing about the cruise ships, first of all, and we were just looking at this, they bought over $500,000 worth of Alaskan salmon last year just for their passengers. That doesn't count the fuel, the rest of the groceries, et cetera, or the number of days that those people stayed in our communities. But I think John with Holland American has some other numbers he'd like to see.
Yeah, since last year, cruise ship passengers spent $33 million while visiting various ports in southeast Alaska. And that was the passengers on board the ships. And then the crews of the ships themselves spent an additional $3 million. And sometimes you don't think of the you know, the crews are spending money, but they do.
Well, I'm going to work with a company this summer that will be doing some cruises into Southeast Alaska, and off their ships, they feel that their people must buy at least $40,000 worth of excursions per sailing, and that means that's renting buses and hiring people that live in Alaska to drive those buses, and that's going to visiting businesses in Alaska, and that's buying drinks, and that's... So yeah. All that money stays here, and as far as the argument that they're all based outside, you have to be based if you're selling a product where that product is going to be purchased, and that product is not being purchased by people in Anchorage or Fairbanks or Nome or Juneau. That product is being purchased by people outside, and the largest companies have tremendous multi-million dollar non-movable assets here in Alaska, and they pay salaries in Alaska, and there are a great number of my students that work not only in the summer but year-round here in Alaska that were born in Alaska that work in this industry.
Yeah, I was going to say the tourism industry employs 16,000 full-time people within the state and have up to 10,000 part-time employees, and I think one out of every 12 jobs in the state right now is a tourism job, and another 22,000 jobs are actually created by tourism, or they touch, tourism touches them, and 93% of the tourism wages are paid to people within the state. The money, you know, stays here.
And it's real local hire.
Yeah.
Well, it is, because they want to know about Alaska. Yeah. And so if I've got someone in my gift shop and someone says something about it and they say, well, I don't know, I just came here.
I just got here.
That's ridiculous. But I think that John points that out, and also the cruise passenger that leaves the ship in either Skagway or Haines or in Juneau and comes to the interior, that person, whether they're on a motor coach or... Which is primarily or on the train, as with one operator, they're spending money locally, and then if they stay in one of John's hotels or Dick's hotel, those people are paying wages. They're buying groceries local. They're buying supplies locally. They're paying local people wages. So
great summer job for students. I was talking to Mary Binkley the other day, and I mean they are hiring a lot more people this year, and of course, they're going to have another steamboat built, and so I assume even more. Mm-hmm.
There's another thing you can point out about tourism employment in Alaska, the kind of employment that it is. Tourism employs people at the lower to moderate income levels, and that's the kind of employment that's getting harder and harder to get to generate in the lower 48. Young people trying to get a job, people who don't have university faculty, or they're not carpenters, they're not in the $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 a year bracket, but they're in the $20,000 to $40,000 bracket, and that's very valuable employment for people in our state. There are a lot of places in the U.S. where young people just can't find work. There isn't work to be had. And in the tourism industry, there's a wide variety of skills and a wide difference in income levels on the ladder, and that I think that's very valuable sorts of employment.
It's still an industry also, I think John will back me up on this, where you can start in at the lowest level of employment as a young person or a not-so-young person, one of the disadvantaged or hardcore unemployed, and through perseverance and hard work can end up as the general manager or the owner of your own business. And that's one of the things that I like about the business.
There's a real career laddering opportunities within it.
Because everything we do within the hotel allows for on-the-job training and learning, and if a person is ambitious, they can move from, a dishwasher's position right on up to restaurant manager, hotel manager.
But your own career was an example of that, having first come here as a tour guide.
Before that, I came and... I worked in a lodge, and I made beds, and washed dishes, and did all sorts of things. So we've sort of done it all.
Yeah, and I think that the reason that we have education is that the programs throughout the country that are involved in tourism education are not a substitute for practical experience, but rather they help you to move more quickly. Mm-hmm. Because if you can put together some academic background and some knowledge and the accounting and some of this and come into a hotel with that background as well as some practical experience, then you move more quickly. You may not get any further, but you will move much more quickly.
Correct. There's another thing you might, I think, that caller alluded to that maybe there's an implication in the question that people come up here on cruise ships, they don't get off the ship, they don't spend much money, they cause us some inconvenience and the necessity of expending our money on capital improvements we otherwise wouldn't do and so forth. A lot of that, though, depends on us. If people are going to get off a cruise ship, it's because they want to. If they want to get off, because we do something at the destination that makes them want to stay. And if we want to get them off the ships and get them into hotels where they do spend more money in the hotel and in the environs than they would off the ship, then that's up to us. We can help ourselves that way.
That's right. That's exactly right. I've been hired. That's what I'm leaving on the 29th of May for. I've been hired by one of the cruise ship companies this summer to get on the ship and to teach their excursion personnel what there is in Alaska and why their people should get off the ship so that obviously they will make some money, but the communities will make some money, and these people then will get off the ship. So they're interested. It's a partnership between all of us. If the person just stays on the cruise ship doesn't make anywhere near as much money as they do as when the people get off.
I thought that was very interesting. Frank Buskey, who used to teach English here at the university, he happened to tell me that he was doing a lecture speaking tour about Alaskan literature on cruise ships last year, and I can really see that would pique people's interest give them extra incentive to do some touring.
Matter of fact, I'm looking for some people right now to do lectures on some of the ships this summer. I've had faculty that have worked for me spend the whole summer doing nothing but riding the cruise ships and lecturing to people
I think my old mate, Klaus Naske, was doing that,
right?
Wasn't he last summer?
Yeah. I got him involved.
We saw him a few times.
Sure.
Yeah.
Southeastern.
Yeah.
Some of the communities have formed together an artist in situ that will be on some of the cruise ships too, and on the ferry.
Yeah.
So Alaskan artists too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, will just be on board, showing their wares and how they develop their things.
It's a lot different than other cruises. You know, the cruise companies used to go, and they still do in some of the other areas, have a resident bridge expert and have a resident chess person or a dance person. And when they come to Alaska, they want to know about Alaska. That's why people are coming. And so the university, of course, is a good place to get them, and other communities to get these kinds of people. Mm-hmm. Plus, of course, it was beautiful, and he enjoyed it. But it's important that we do it. And I'm going to be doing it at least on one or two sailings this summer, the same sort of thing, only I'm going to be working primarily with the crew to teach them about Alaska.
TVCC sponsors a program called Elder Hostel, and that encourages older senior citizens to come and do some coursework, and they tour the ice cave and they take some courses on our environment, the mineral resources, wildlife, and so on, and have a wonderful time. And that really, those people who take advantage of that program stay in the community for, I think, a couple of weeks at least. So that, I think that that's a growing idea of learning something about the area you're visiting, which is probably being used a lot of places.
And the university does other things, of course, aside from the museum, which is one of the major attractions here in Fairbanks. But the workshop on Alaska, which I attended in 1974, has been going on, I think, 19 or 20 years. Tremendous information on Alaska, but also brings in a lot of people who to teach in the area of geography or history, whatever, and who come to Alaska to take that.
It's sponsored by Conferences and Continuing
Ed.
And so if someone has a question on that program. Plus, we have the music camp. Joe Scott's
Music festival.
Camp and festival, but you can study with various performers
from all over the United States, not only Alaskans.
And that is a real growing concern. And in addition, the writers, Midnight Sun Writers Conference, but which
what
is
what we need is spring and fall and
yes.
winter. We need that. we need September and October, and it's beautiful up here. It's not crowded. There's fewer people.
That's the weather is nice. Secret,
that's
by
right.
The way.
Yes.
And I get some people that come in May or come in October, and they just marvel at how wonderful it is, and the weather is nice, and it's not crowded, and they have a wonderful time. But we have to get some of our operators, of course, to agree to continue to have things available for these people to do early and late. It's kind of a catch-22 situation.
Actually, March is a wonderful time. I have a friend whose brother came up in March last year, and he said, I'm never coming in the summer with all those mosquitoes again. He said, March is great because
we
have so much light.
Well,
we
have time to talk to him also.
We have so
time as Alaskan people
to talk to him. And new events and new attractions and things of that sort are developing. I was talking to the head of the Geophysical Institute. They just now have a large screen up there where they can show beautiful films of the aurora that people can come up and see. So more things are coming along.
You can't see the aurora if you come in the summer.
Right.
No, they come out. I love it. Well, what time should I go out? John probably has seen this at his hotel. We see it in Beaver Creek and at the Fairbanks Inn, and they come up. And what time does it come out?
Yeah,
about
October.
Well,
later on in the season when it's dark at night, into August, first part of September, we always tell people what time they might expect to see it, if they want to get up in the middle of the night.
Sure.
And many of them do.
We have a caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello? Hello?
Yes?
My sister and I have an idea for a tourism business, and we don't have the resources to get it started, and we were wondering who we would go to for that sort of thing. If there's an agency of the state or anything like that.
Well,
without selling our idea away,
Okay. At the present time, the state no longer has a tourism revolving loan fund, as they do with the fishing revolving loan fund, but through the ADA package, they do tourism loans, and a great deal of money has gone for that. Another way, of course, is to look for some local investors that are always available for this type of business. The tourism business is basically a mom-and-pop type business in Alaska, although we're seeing major companies come in. That's a source. Local banks are a source. But the state does not have, at this time, a specific program just for tourism investment.
Do they have an agency where you can get advice?
Right down at the state building, and I forget the department, but it Willis Griman.
Administration?
That's the federal, but it's the state. They call it the investment now. They used to call it the Division of Business Loans, but now they call it the investment, and it's right in the phone book.
Yeah, Willis Griman, you said?
Willis.
Oh,
Griman.
Willis.
Right.
Yeah, it's a division of the State Department of Commerce.
Right.
And they give advice on how to start
businesses. Oh, yeah.
They tell you what kind of forms you need to fill out.
And they'll tell you, they'll also instruct you in how you can build financing. For instance, if you've got an idea for a little business, they'll point out to you that your potential for raising financing to execute it would be looked on much more favorably if you've talked operators into buying your package, and so you can develop contracts with them and all that sort of thing.
There's also another one, which is the state-funded program, which is contracted to the Fairbanks Native Association, located in the Courthouse Square building, Cornelia Gradinska, and is it John Pearson?
Not John Pearson.
No.
But it's on the third floor.
It's on the third floor in the Courthouse Square building, and that is a small business state program, which is only to help people obtain bank financing and to develop a package and a program.
That we could even set up, like you were saying, with the university, and people could get credit for it and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like there are lots of helping resources available, and you can always call Janet and her assistants at the
Convention and Visitor Bureau at 456-5774.
If you have questions. And actually, it's a very good place to call if you have visitors from out of town and want to know what's going on and what you can do with your guests.
And to stop by and pick up information about Fairbanks and about the various attractions we have, as well as points north, the east, and west of here.
You've recently had, and I believe they are still here, and I certainly don't want to end the program without mentioning them, our highway neighbors are in town visiting us.
Yes.
That right, Janet?
The state, maybe Ralph would like to speak with it. He's on the board of the Alaska Visitors Association. But the local
it's
chapter.
The local chapter that really does this. And
yes.
We started this years ago, and it's really been good to,
yes.
You know, people come in on the highway particular, and they get to Tok, and they can either go left or they can go straight. If they go left, we may not see them. And so we started this program bringing in our friends from Tok and even as far as Whitehorse, and then we started with Anchorage and Valdez, and then from all around. And they get a real bargain weekend, but they get to see the Travelers Inn and the Bartlett Inn and many other, the Polaris and Chena Hot Springs and Andy Westcott's operation and John Reeves' Gold Dredge and a lot of these different places. So then when somebody comes to their business and says, well, you know, should I go to Anchorage? No, go to Fairbanks. Go on the riverboat. Do this. Go there. Well, where should I stay? Well, this is where you should stay. Or when they themselves come to town.
This
they'll spend money.
This year they have 110 people registered.
Yes, which is the largest registration they've ever had.
We saw them last night getting on the riverboat after dinner, and they all looked like they were having a wonderful time.
They do know how to have fun.
Well, it's a lot easier to promote something when you've had firsthand experience with it going somewhere. It's easier to promote.
Yes.
I just wanted to say one thing before we got off the air here. Is you may have heard that this is going to be a record tourist season this year, and it is. There'll be a record number of tourists coming, but please don't worry about hotel space in Fairbanks.
Area who hear rumors that there are no hotel space available can somehow call in, and we just are starting looking into
that. Okay, we've got two quick calls. Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes? You're on the air.
Oh, yes. I was just interested is there much interest in multi-day adventure travel trips such as hiking, river running, from the tourist industry people that you've talked to, such as the Japanese or the major tour companies?
There's probably 30 new companies that have been developed in the past 3 or 4 years just to take care of this. Many of them, however, with the package people, are the one-day or the half-day adventure travel, the river rafting that can be done quickly, the trip to Dai, these kinds of things. But there are multi-numbers of companies that are developing these packages that fit into all kinds of markets.
And that's a trend that's broadening
it's
all the
growing.
Time.
Yeah, especially here.
Thank you. I've got another caller I'm going to try and squeeze in here. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes. At present time, I'm a foreign language student at the university, and I'm very interested in using this through tourism, taking more academic courses and a minor offered through business. Are there any scholarships available?
As a matter of fact, we had three students here at the university that have just won. Amy Ross from Sitka got a $2,000 scholarship. The Bud Hagberg scholarship. Marsha Winkleman got a $1,000 scholarship from Mark Ayer. And Kimberly Gilbert got a $1,000 scholarship. So they were
so
just given out.
Okay, so I could find out about those.
You can call my office, 474-6528.
Pardon me?
You can call my office, Ralph Nestor, at 474-6528.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good. Good luck on that scholarship. I wish you well in your study of tourism. I think that we should all take the lesson from this conversation today that although tourists may make it a little slower to get down Airport Road in the summer, in fact, it is a great boon to our economy, and even those of us who are not directly connected with the tourist business benefit by the fact that it provide so much employment and so
well
much
said.
Income.
The other thing is to just realize that we also like to travel and we want to be treated nicely when we travel someplace and these people are the same.
Well, and I actually think that Fairbanksans are very hospitable people, and probably the people who live here are probably the best attraction to attract tourists and to encourage them to come back. I've enjoyed this conversation with Ralph Nestor, Dick Holden, John Steinbach, and Janet Halverson.
Thank you.
Hope we have a great season with lots and lots of happy tourists here in Fairbanks this summer. I've been your host, Patty Kostelic. This has been Home Fires Radio Show. Our executive producer is Carla Tonella. Have a nice weekend.
And you're listening to KUAC-FM in Fairbanks. Coming up in just 1 hour, it's Puccini's Madama Butterfly. And for those opera buffs who are waiting for that, I'll give you a bit of trivia information. Today is opera singer Brigitte Nielsen's birthday. She is 68 today. So you can celebrate that when you listen to our Chicago Lyric Opera presentation of Puccini's Madama Butterfly. Right now, though, we go to Speakers Forum.
The following broadcast from Lyric
Tulane University's A.B. Freeman School of Business presents the 1985 ITT Key Issues Lecture Series, Confronting the Federal Budget and Trade Deficits. Taking part in the series along with ITT are the Tulane Center for Latin American Studies and the Tulane International Trade Association. In this first of four programs, we'll review the findings of the Grace Commission and explore suggestions for controlling the cost of big government. Here to introduce our speaker, Grace Commission Project Director George Goldberger, is the Lecture Series Chairman, Professor Hugh Long.
We begin today with a look at whether or not our current budget deficit is what it is, in part because of waste. Beginning in 1982, Mr. George S. Goldberger served as the Project Director and a member of the Economic Analysis and Senior Review Group for the President's Private Sector Survey on Cost Control for the federal government. This survey, better known as the Grace Commission, was established by President Reagan and was made up of a private sector group of 160 chief executive officers and over 2,000 volunteers who came together to study the efficiency of government operations and to identify opportunities for cost saving